This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, July 30th, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, host of the Baseball Tonight podcast. Taylor Schwenk is producing this podcast from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. And Taylor, we got two big pieces of news before we move ahead with all the news we're going to see with the trade deadline. Jeff Passan's going to come on and talk about what might be happening here as we move forward. Paul Ambigides will be here to talk about the deals that happened. Joey Gallo last night, agreement between the Rangers and the Yankees. Todd Radom will be here with the weekly quiz. But two big developments. One, you saw a bear last night.
I did, Buster. My first bear in nearly 2 years in Connecticut. I am thrilled about it. I took a video. I immediately sent it to you. And I was at a little farm winery spot near my house hanging out. My cousin, his fiance, are in town from Florida. And all of a sudden, my cousin's fiance just yells, "Is that a bear?" Not knowing, because they're from Florida. They don't know that bears roam these hills around here. So as soon as she said it, I knew there was no question. Hopped up, turned around about, 500 yards away, about a 600-pound bear just lumbering through this field. The farmer of the farm showed up, and he said, "I hope he's not getting my grapes, or I'm going to have to chase him off in the truck." But it was a thrilling moment for sure.
Yeah, and that estimate on his weight came from the farmer. Mm-hmm. And, I haven't seen a bear live, but have some sense of mass of critters from growing up on the farm. And I agree, that was a big bear. Like, you could see the musculature, underneath his hair. Man, that was impressive. So that was a cool moment for you. The second big piece of news is an unusual schedule for the podcast in the next 24 hours.
Indeed. So tomorrow it is the trade deadline. We traditionally do a trade deadline show in the afternoon. Because it's on a Friday, it's a little bit of some awkward timing here. We are only going to have the trade deadline episode tomorrow. That'll be out tomorrow evening. So no podcast in the morning. Don't be refreshing your feed and tweeting me and Buster, "Where's the podcast?" Because it's coming in the evening, and it'll be Buster and Dave Schoenfield and Sarah Langs breaking down all the action at the deadline.
Yeah, our thought is that, look, by the time we get to tomorrow morning and we tape it, we'd only have about 7 hours left before the trade deadline. And, there'd be a lot of moving parts and deals might go down actually as we're talking. Mm-hmm. So we just want to wait until the deals are all done and we can sit back and we can assess what happened in this year's trade deadline. Yesterday, a lot of stuff going on. The New York Yankees are set to acquire Joey Gallo from the Texas Rangers for 6 minor leaguers, according to sources talking with Jeff Passan. The deal last night was under medical review. The Rangers will receive right-handers Glenn Otto, Randy Vasquez, second baseman Ezekiel Duran, shortstop Josh Smith, and two others. So Gallo, because of all this, was scratched from the Rangers lineup in their game against the Arizona Diamondbacks. We're going to be hearing a lot from Paul Ambigides about this trade. The Yankees played the Rays last night, maybe a little bit juiced by getting the news of the potential Joey Gallo deal. It was 1-1 top of the 10th inning. Aaron Judge came to the plate.
1-1 on the ground, and it's off the glove of the shortstop, Franco. Coming in is Urshela. To third base goes Allen, and Judge knocks in the go-ahead run.
Tell you what, that's a ball that I thought Wander Franco should have had. Looks like it took off on him once it hit the dirt. This infield has that tendency to do that.
That was Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez on ESPN television. The Yankees go on to win that game 3-1. The Milwaukee Brewers added another infielder to their roster Wednesday, trading with the Arizona Diamondbacks for veteran infielder Eduardo Escobar. Escobar, 32, had 22 home runs for last place Diamondbacks, and he made his first All-Star game this season. He could play any infield position. The Houston Astros continue to fortify their bullpen before the trade deadline, acquiring closer Yimi Garcia from the Miami Marlins. The Oakland Athletics acquired Starling Marte from the Marlins for Jesus Luzardo. Really interesting trade. Hemo and I are going to dig into that big time. Let's dig into the good stuff. How about Shohei Ohtani yesterday?
Here's the pitch, and there's a ball. It's hit well out into right field, and that ball is out of here! Shohei Ohtani has done it again. That is home run number 37 of the season. That's a 3-run shot. Angels take a 4-3 lead. And again tonight, it's showtime.
Yeah, Terry Smith on Angels Radio. Look, the Angels are kind of hanging on the fringes of the wild card race. Their chances are less than 10%. But a lot of the conversation in the last 2 months is going to be about whether or not Ohtani is going to be the American League MVP. Joe Maddon, their manager, said it's not even close. The Brewers played the Pirates, and Tyrone Taylor's gotten some big hits lately. Got an RBI hit in the seventh inning yesterday.
1-2 pitch. Here's a line drive into right field for a base hit. Garcia around third. He's being waved home. Here's the throw to the plate. It's cut off. And Tyrone Taylor makes it a 7-0 lead with an RBI single into right field.
620 WTMJ. Brewers win 7-3. The Blue Jays edge the Red Sox 4-1 with help from Randall Grichuk.
Another 3-2 pitch. Hit in the air to deep center field. This ball is up and gone over the wall in center field for Randall Grichuk. He stays back and clubs it to deep center field, his 19th home run of the season. And Randall has driven in all three Blue Jays runs.
Buck Martinez, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Astros thump the Mariners 11-4 with help from Kyle Tucker.
2-2, and that's lifted pretty deep to left center field. It sends back long, still going back, looking up. See you later! Into the Mariners' bullpen, a two-run home run for Kyle Tucker, and it is 11-4 Astros. Tucker goes deep for the 20th time this year.
Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM. The Mets edge the Braves 2-1. The Braves are 1-5 in one-run game since the All-Star break, tied for the most losses in Major League Baseball. The Mets are 4-1 in one-run games over that span. The Reds beat up the Cubs 8-2. Another homer for Joey Votto. He's homered in five straight games. According to the Last Sports Bureau, only two players since 1900 have longer streaks at age 37 or older. Four Washington Nationals players and eight staffers tested positive for COVID-19, forcing Major League Baseball to postpone their game against the Phillies on Wednesday night. They are scheduled to play a doubleheader today. Among those who tested positive, Trey Turner, according to his manager, Dave Martinez. Trey Turner's name has been out there in trade talks. Jeff Passan will be talking about that coming up. And the civil hearing for the temporary restraining order obtained against the Dodgers' Trevor Bauer has been moved to August 16th and 19th. The hearing, expected to last between 2 and 3 days, was originally scheduled for August 3rd, 4th, and 19th, but Bauer's side once again asked for continuance, sources told MLB, so Trevor Bauer continues to be out indefinitely.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. Jeff, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing well. Look, this time of year, I have certainly have had situations where you feel like you're a wind-up toy leading up to the trade deadline, and you're basically asked to perform, you know, tricks in front of everybody, where you just have all this information, and it's just a question of, like, tapping onto the right button to do it. And I think that's what I'm going to do with you today. I'm just going to, you know, mention a name, I'm going to mention a team, and then I just want you to spew all of your knowledge. How does that sound?
That sounds like a plan. I'm here to do cartwheels and handstands.
There you go. All right. Max Scherzer, what do we know?
West Coast. I feel like the Dodgers are the favorites. Maybe it's because I've seen the Dodgers go out in the past and make these sorts of deals. You know, for a long time, Andrew Friedman's reputation was we're just going to trade to get better on the margins. But then he goes out and gets Manny Machado. Then he goes out and gets Yu Darvish. Then he goes out and gets Mookie Betts. And all of a sudden it's like, no, he's not trading on the margins. He's trading like a big market GM with a ton of money and an incredibly deep farm system should. And to get Max Scherzer, I think the Padres need to move Eric Hosmer's money. There are indications that they have the ability to do so and that somebody's going to be willing to take that on. Perhaps if Robert Hassel, the really good outfield prospect, is attached. And if Hosmer moves, all bets are off. The San Francisco Giants also could make a play here. They have an underrated farm system. And it's the sort of farm system that is going to make them organizationally not on par, I don't think, with the Dodgers, but really challenging them for years to come along with the Padres in the National League West. But I think Scherzer moves. I think he probably moves today just because of all the complications with his contract and with his no trade rights. And I think he moves out west with the Dodgers being the favorites.
Now, do we have any indication as to whether or not, because he could, as Giancarlo Stanton did when he was traded, he could completely control this. Like he could tell the Nationals, look, the Dodgers are the only team I want to go to. Yep. Do we have any indication he'll narrow down his choices even further?
Yeah, it is certainly possible at this point, but I haven't gotten the indication that he wants to do anything other than go play for a winner. And a winner that doesn't necessarily have to sign him now, but where he could foresee himself playing in the future, which is why Tampa Bay, for all of its gumption and exploring the Max Scherzer market the way that it has, I'm not sure that that's going to be a place where he's likely to end up.
I had a GM say to me the other day when his tricep issue popped up, like, oh, that's going to torpedo his trade value. Among the people you've talked to, how much of that is a concern?
It's a concern. But I don't think it's enough of a concern to torpedo the trade value. And you wonder, because the Nationals have so many good players available now, whether it's Daniel Hudson, Josh Harrison's been excellent this year, or even Trey Turner. Like, it's one thing to go out and get just Max Scherzer. Imagine one of these teams going and getting Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. And here's the thing about Trey Turner. If he were just a shortstop, it would be one thing. He's played center field too. And the Dodgers, you know, Cody Bellinger has struggled big time this year. You could shift him over to a corner possibly or play him at first base. The Giants, for all of the outfield depth they have, and they have a lot, they don't have a star in the outfield. And you know, with Brandon Crawford playing as well as he has this year, if Brandon Crawford's healthy, he's going to play shortstop and Trey Turner would move to center field. So it's not like there is a limit on what any of these teams are capable of doing. Max Scherzer by himself is a blockbuster. Max Scherzer and Trey Turner together would be the blockbuster.
I got to say that my sense is that there was enough concern about the tricep issue that I wouldn't be surprised if there was some protection built into the trade structure. In other words, if Max Scherzer makes X number of starts, this is the list of prospects you choose from. If he's limited by the tricep issue and he makes a fewer number of starts, then instead you work from column B. Yes?
I don't think that's going to be the only type of trade like that either. You know, somebody like Danny Duffy, who's on the injured list right now, still is appealing to teams that want pitching. And I think those types of trades are tough to exit. Like, landing this thing with Max Scherzer is like triple Lindy level hard. Between the finances, with Scherzer not getting paid a dollar this year because everything is deferred, and the 10 and 5 rights, which give him the ability to pick his destination, and the injury. This is like the complication of all complications trade.
Kyle Benning sent us a Bleacher tweet, and I thought this would allow us to speak about the Cubs big picture. He wrote, from 10 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday night, with less than 48 hours left before the trade deadline, does it surprise you that the Cubs haven't made more trades? Bryant, Rizzo, Kimbrel, Davies, Baez, DePera have got to be too much for Hoyer to try to move all last minute. Jeff, when I saw this, I thought it was a fair point, but I also think that the last month, Jed Hoyer has been preparing for this. He's been gathering information, and it feels like he's sitting in his office and he's got a row of dominoes in front of him. And once we get close to the trade deadline and all of the potential buyers declare themselves and all of the potential leverage manifests, then he's going to move quickly. What do you think?
Sometimes it's about execution. And Jed Hoyer's been doing this long enough to understand who he is, how he works, and what he's capable of. And I'm not saying that he's going to go out there and slay this trade deadline and just make rapid fire move after rapid fire move, and all of them are going to work out well. But you also have to be conscientious of the market that's around you. And I got a text from a GM 2 o'clock in the morning a couple days ago saying prices are insane. And yesterday, seeing what Starling Marte returned to the Marlins, I understand that Jesús Luzardo has flaws, but we're talking about a guy who, going into last season was like a top 10 prospect in all of baseball and was untouchable. And the Oakland A's do incredible things with pitchers. We see they've taken Cole Irvin off the scrap heap, and he's been one of the most valuable starters in baseball this year because of the volume innings he can put in. They've rescued James Caprillion from injury hell and turned him into an effective pitcher. Chris Bassett, they've taken him and helped him evolve into an all-star. Sean Manaea is great. Frankie Montas is solid. Like, that's a very good five-man rotation right there. So you understand why that may influence their willingness to give up Luzardo. That being said, for 2 months of Starling Marte, that is a risky trade to make. And I think it's emboldening sellers even more, because they say if Starling Marte for 2 months can get a prospect like that, well, what can we get if for Chris Bryant, who arguably is every bit the player that Starling Marte is, if not better? He's a former MVP. He's got more power than Marte does. He's got versatility, being able to play third base in the outfield. I mean, Chris Bryant played shortstop on Wednesday. I don't think he's going to be playing shortstop long term, but the fact that he can be there for even an inning or two, I think illustrates why teams look at him and say, this is a guy we want, because wherever we're weak, he can help us be strong.
Craig Kimbrell, what you got?
There are just so many different possibilities for him. The Phillies could use him. The Red Sox could use him. The Blue Jays could use him. And the Blue Jays, haven't done anything with the Yankees going and getting Joey Gallo and the A's going and getting Marte. It's like, okay, what's the move for the Blue Jays? I think any of the West Coast teams could look to get him. He makes you better. Like, that's the thing about Craig Kimbrell. You are going to be a demonstrably better team with him on it, which is, I think, why the Cubs are holding out as strong as they are on him, because he warrants a massive return.
Anthony Rizzo.
Doesn't Boston make too much sense?
I think
you said it on this podcast a couple of days ago. Boston, just for every reason, makes sense. And like, the sentimental reason is at the bottom of the list, but the fact that it even exists, I think factors into human thinking. Like, I think GMs, and Chaim Bloom's a perfect illustration of this, try and separate the emotional from the tactile. They want to look at what's there on their screen in front of them, whether it is scouting reports or numbers, and make baseball-based decisions. But we're human beings. And the fact that Anthony Rizzo, after beating cancer and winning a World Series somewhere else, is coming back to the place that, helped him grow up, it's a great story. And, oh, by the way, the Red Sox are 30th in offensive production among first basemen in baseball this year. And I don't know how long Rafi Devers' quad's going to keep them out, but the Red Sox are as good as they are because their offense is strong. And even though they're adding Jaron Duran, and he's been impactful so far, and adding Tanner Houck, and he's looked great, and about to add Chris Sale, and boy, that's a hell of a thing to get for free going into August when everybody else is giving up assets to get better going into it. The Red Sox have room to improve, and I think this is one that probably is not going to cost a whole lot either in terms of capital.
I agree with you, and I also think You know, after having conversations with people this week, I think it'll be re-energizing for Rizzo to go to a different situation. It really feels like that, you know, his relationship with the Cubs is, if you remember when the Yankees and Derek Jeter had a negotiation, and I can't remember what his camp asked for, like 125 or 150. And that's when Brian Cashman said, we're not doing that. Go out and check the market. Like, it feels like there was a radically different view of what his value was. And the relationship has gotten more businesslike as opposed to, you know, Rizzo going out and having fun every day. That's my sense of it. And I think he'll be completely energized if he gets traded to a contender, whether it's Boston or some other team. Chris Bryant, Javier Baez.
I'll start with the latter first. I don't think Baez goes anywhere. I mean, he could, because he can play shortstop and second base. There are plenty of teams. I would love to see him go to the White Sox. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think Kimbrel going to the White Sox is realistic. But boy, if they're looking for bullpen help and a second baseman, that would be an awfully fun trade to see happen. I think Baez is the likeliest of the big four with the Cubs to stay. Bryant is just such a fascinating case. He makes so much sense for the New York Mets that you feel like that's the kind of deal that should get done. But I keep hearing Tampa and I keep hearing San Francisco. And, I don't know if the Giants are worried about Evan Longoria or they see their outfield as a group of guys, but not guys. And they want to get a guy, and they see that's what Chris Bryant is. I mean, you have to remember, Scott Harris, their general manager, was essentially raised by the Chicago Cubs. And he and Jed Hoyer have a very close relationship. And I don't know if that necessarily makes guys capable of trading more, but the one thing those two have is trust and knowledge. And that's something I don't think is overrated when it comes to trades. I don't think either of them feels like the other is going to be trying to job them or is going to be lying to the other. And that trust makes for a much easier negotiation.
You couched it perfectly. I think that there is concern within the Giants organization about Evan Longoria. And as he comes back, if he comes back, how effective he'll be. And Chris Bryant would be a great safety net there. I did get up this morning and we talked about teams under pressure. I think Steve Cohen's Mets are as much under pressure as any other team because the fan base in his first trade deadline, they're looking for a splash. And with all due respect to Rich Hill, I don't think he quite fits the bill. And I got to say, you know, not knowing exactly what's going to happen with Jacob deGrom going forward, a 4-game lead over the Phillies, a 5-game lead over the Braves, having worked in New York for a lot of the years. You project forward, if somehow they didn't win this division, good Lord, the reaction would be enormous if they didn't do anything after this deadline.
I agree. But I think one thing we have to keep in mind about Steve Cohen is his background. And in the investment world, Steve Cohen was never someone to allow markets to push him off of his position of what value is. Like, you don't make billions of dollars in the market by following the S&P 500. You make billions of dollars in the market by zagging when others zig. And you got to zag in the right direction. But as much as he has presented himself as the everyman, as the average fan, he's clearly not. And if it's going to make the Mets demonstrably worse going forward to get better in this year, in which they're the fifth best team maybe in their league and the 10th best team maybe in baseball, I just don't see why the Mets go out and go for overkill at this point in order to placate fans. The truth is that division is so soft that as long as DeGrom comes back by, say, mid-August, and as long as Francisco Lindor doesn't spend too much time on the injured list rehabbing his oblique, I still think the Mets are the best team in that division, even though we know the Phillies' schedule going forward is absolutely terrible. It just feels like them and the Braves are going to spend the season treading water at 500. Like we're almost two thirds into the season at this point, Buster. And I haven't seen the sort of finishing kick that either needs in a race to go and catch the Mets.
We'll see. It'll all be unveiled here in the next 30 hours or so. All right, Jeff, thanks for doing this. I will see you tomorrow at the trade deadline.
I'm looking forward to it. A good old 2.5 hour show together.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Himbo, Paul Imbecate, he's a researcher at ESPN, the head honcho on the show Get Up, he tells us. We know that Mike Greenberg lives through him vicariously. Himbo, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the way I'm doing this is I'm going to have Jeff talk about deals that are still on the table, and I'm talking to you about deals that have gotten done. The Joey Gallo deal, as you and I speak at about 9 a.m. on Thursday morning, is not officially done. We haven't got an announcement from the Yankees that I've seen, but it looks like it's pretty much wrapped up. What do you think about this?
Well, I think most Yankees fans view it as a slam dunk, Buster, but I view it as a massive risk. I view it as a risk worth taking, but a massive risk nonetheless. We all know the reasons why Joey Gallo is such a good fit for the Yankees. They're 29th in baseball right now in platoon advantage. They're much too right-handed dependent. He obviously fills the void in the middle of their lineup in that regard. I also think he could be something of a force multiplier in that lineup, even though there's not a whole lot of good research that suggests lineup protection is a thing. I do think putting him into the middle of that lineup will serve as maybe something of a second leadoff hitter with just how many walks he's drawing this year. I think will supercharge the back half of that lineup. And it goes without saying that he's not just a bat. I mean, he is right now leading baseball in defensive runs saved as a right fielder. He's a plus base runner. And both of those things obviously go a long way in helping the Yankees, who have become seemingly so unathletic and one dimensional. But I also think that you have to just, you know, mention the fact that this guy's a .211 career hitter and that he was absolutely terrible last year. He batted .181 last year with a .301 on base percentage over that 60-game season, which is to say, we know that he's capable of going through long, prolonged stretches of not hitting just because there's so much swing and miss in his game. So it's sort of Brian Cashman playing with fire here a little bit, in my judgment, because if he hits, he's going to be a massive difference maker. And even if he doesn't, obviously the other stuff will still play up. But Yankees fans want to see someone inject life into that lineup, and you know, a lot more of the three true outcome stuff. I do think it's a pretty massive risk considering where this lineup is right now. Look, obviously the middle of the season is not the time to remake your organizational philosophy. He fits in perfectly in that sense. So I suppose they're just leaning into it. But I think to paint this as a slam dunk, I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Well, how would you line up the top of the Yankees order? Because I would go LeMahieu, Gallo, Judge. What about you?
I think I'd probably go LeMahieu, Judge, Gallo, and then get into the righties. I mean, I think ideally you want to hit Gallo cleanup if you can. And I think you always hit your best hitter too. That's where I put Aaron Judge. But look, this guy's having an unbelievable year. I mean, if you look at his WAR this season, the value he's produced this season, he would be the best position player on the Yankees if he had done it for them so far. So this is a massive shot in the arm, and somehow Cash was able to do it without trading away any of his top 10 prospects. So I suppose in some sense they have to consider that a major win.
Yeah, something that I'm wondering about as he goes there is how he'll handle the New York market, which is very different than Texas. He has a lot of swing and miss. Every star player who goes into New York amid expectations gets booed. It's something if you're an internal, you know, product, if you came up through the Yankees farm system, you don't deal with that as much. But if you're Alex Rodriguez, you are Jason Giambi, you know, your Giancarlo Stanton, your Garrett Cole, if you don't perform when you arrive, you're going to get booed. Joey Gallo is going to get booed at some point, and I'm wondering how he's going to do with that. You know, that's something I'll be watching going forward for sure. Starling Marte goes to the Oakland Athletics. What'd you think of that deal?
Well, it's a good deal for the A's. It's a good deal for the A's because right now their outfield is not producing at all. They have a 697 OPS that ranks 27th in baseball. Starling Marte, conversely, is having his best hitting season. He's got 22 steals on 25 attempts. He's grounded into two double plays, and we know that he can really run and that he can really go get it in the outfield. It goes without saying he makes them better right now, and you got to give Billy Bean credit. He goes for it seemingly every year his teams have a chance. It's a great deal, though, for the Marlins because of the opportunity that they have here with 4+ years of control for Jesus Luzardo, who has frontline stuff, as we know, and an outstanding minor league track record. You couple that with the fact that the Marlins have an outstanding recent track record with young pitchers, Trevor Rogers, Pablo Lopez, Sandy Alcantara, just to name a few. And all of a sudden, they're really building something here. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think the Marlins are no more than 2 or 3 years away from being as consistently good as the Rays are. The processes that they've gone through in order to get there have been thorough. They've not cut corners. And this trade is just another example of that. Marte's been outstanding for them, obviously, but he's not a long-term answer. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Jesus Luzardo flips the script in Florida and becomes a, at worst, mid-rotation kind of starter for them for the next 2 or 3 years.
I got to tell you, if I were sitting on the Marlins side and the Oakland Athletics put Luzardo on the table as they did during these conversations, like, I would go out of the room and take a deep breath. That would be a huge red flag for me. Like, okay, what don't we know about him? You know, what information do the Athletics have? Because the idea that a small market team would trade a talented left-hander who, you know, had the performance that he did as he was coming up as a prospect and put him out there when he's not making any money, that to me would raise so many questions. But I think, you know, given the situation, if you say to yourself, okay, even if he comes with warts, even if he comes with concern, you're only talking about giving up a rental for him. Like, for a 2-month rental to wind up a Luzardo, I like that gamble for the Marlins, but I also would recognize this is not a deal that small market teams make unless they have major concerns. Yes?
Yes, it's a fair point. I will also say that despite the flaws, despite what the A's know that we might not, Jesus Luzardo is still a better asset, a greater asset than a potential compensation pick that they would receive for Starling Marte.
Yes.
And I actually do sort of like the strategy, like the philosophy. We saw what the Rangers did. They decided to go for volume. They decided to go for 4 prospects, none of whom rank in the top 10 of the Yankee system. This is them just taking a shot at a guy and the talent. And like you said, even if he winds up busting in Miami, he was a shot worth taking based upon the track record, especially when you're giving away 2 years of a player, 2 months of a player's control. I'm betting on Luzardo flipping it around with the Marlins, unless there's something medically that we don't know. But if the issue is just pitchability, you know, disagreements with the organization, philosophy, et cetera, I'll take my chances with that kid.
Eduardo Escobar going to the Milwaukee Brewers. I walked away from seeing the Brewers on Sunday Night Baseball the other day thinking, you know what? This is a team with the right moves before the deadline that could win the World Series. What did you think of this trade?
Well, I think Craig Counsell is as good a chess player as there is in baseball, and Escobar is merely another chess piece for his lineup. And like, I think it's become fairly obvious that the team can really, really pitch, but their offense still has a long way to go. It would be among the worst offenses, at least in recent years, of teams that reach the World Series, should they be lucky enough to do so. And he's a switch hitter that plays multiple positions. He's going to fit in nicely there. And obviously, there's not a long-term commitment. I am all in, as I said many times, on the Brewers. But the fact that right now Christian Yelich is out, and when he's been in, really not hitting the way that, you know, he did, you know, in 2018 and 2019, when he was the best hitter in the National League, they have to add. They just needed to add something to the lineup. I wouldn't be surprised if they did one more small thing. And look, Escobar's a league average hitter, a switch hitter that can play multiple positions in the field. He gives Counsell options, and there's really no manager in baseball who's better at using those options than Craig Counsell. So I give them a bravo for that.
You mentioned, before you go, you mentioned the pitching staff, and you've dug out a great number on that.
It's actually your number, Buster. I'll give you the credit. Again, it's your stat called crush quotient. What crush quotient does is measures the amount of total bases that you either generate per swing or, in the pitcher's case, of course, allow per swing. And as I was perusing the top of that leaderboard yesterday, it struck me that Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, and Corbin Burns rank first, second, and third, respectively, among all qualified pitchers in baseball. So by at least one standard of measure, the Brewers have the best three starting pitchers in all of baseball. And history says these guys are as good as any rotation ever, or at least the top of any rotation ever. Right now, all three of those guys own an ERA plus of 180 or better. In other words, all three pitchers have been 80% better than the league average or better. There has never been a team in baseball history who has three pitchers that can say that. If I were to put money on one team right now to come out of the National League, it would be those guys. I'm confident they're going to win their division. And when you combine those three starters with Hader and Williams on the back end, and what I think will be a slightly better lineup the last couple months of the season, I think those guys are a rocket to the moon, Buster.
You know, it's funny, you know, for years, anytime the topic of betting would come up because of the, you know, the history baseball has with betting, I'd almost run in the other direction about the conversation. But now that it feels like it absolutely is all, you know, it's all fair and it's all out there. If I were someone who bet on baseball, I think I would bet on the Brewers to win the World Series.
Mm. So you were just there. You were just there over the weekend. What were your impressions of watching them play? I mean, that was a potential World Series matchup for some. What were your impressions?
Yeah. And by the way, their odds of winning the World Series as of today, 11-1, according to VegasInsider.com. I think their pitching is phenomenal and their defense is phenomenal. And they are clearly a limited offensive team, but with pitching that great, you could see them winning. They reminded me of, you know, the team that I grew up watching, the Dodgers, the 1988 Dodgers, with that Oral Hershiser and some other great pitchers with a fairly mediocre offense, especially when Kirk Gibson went out during the postseason, yet they found a way to win.
And I could be proven wrong. I could be proven wrong, but given this run scoring environment this year, I think teams like the Brewers are going to be the ones that are the last ones standing in the playoffs, because with how suppressed offenses, even with the absence of the sticky substances, the Brewers and teams like it, those would be the teams I'd be betting on to make it deep. So I'm very curious to see which teams add those arms, those dominant arms, power arms, whether it is the starters or the relievers today and tomorrow at the deadline, because those decisions might very well wind up determining who wins each of these leagues.
Exactly. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America or all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing this week? It's trade deadline week, which you as a Red Sox fan, about the same age that I am, you got to remember that trade deadline day when it looked like Raleigh Fingers and Joe Rudy were going to go to your Red Sox back in 1976.
Buster, anytime I am in Cooperstown and I see the plaque of Bowie Kuhn, I think of that. And I cringe a little bit. And we all, most of us, many of us, I don't know, remember those pictures of Raleigh Fingers in a Red Sox uniform with his spectacular mustache and think about what might have been. But yeah, so a big week for you. Good luck. I hope you're taking your vitamins.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about your forgotten franchise with this week. And appropriately, I think based on the topic we just discussed, your choice this week.
So, Buster, the Kansas City Athletics are not a completely forgotten franchise, but they do deserve a look here. They represent the meat in the A's sandwich that began in Philadelphia in 1901 and exists today in Oakland, albeit perilously, with Kansas City representing a 13-year stop in their coast-to-coast journey. The Athletics franchise was founded as a charter member of the American League and won 5 World Series and 9 AL pennants. But by the early 1950s, the A's had fallen on very hard times in every conceivable sense. On October 12th, 1954, American League owners approved the sale of the Athletics to Chicago businessman Arnold Johnson, who intended to move the club to KC. Importantly, Johnson had the support of the powerful Yankees, which is not surprising when you consider the fact that Johnson actually owned Yankee Stadium at the time the deal was done. He also owned the ballpark in Kansas City, which was the home of the Yankees' AAA farm team and became the A's home field for their entire 13-year run. The newly relocated A's soon became what has been described as, and I will quote, a loosely controlled Yankees farm club. Kansas City and New York partnered up for 16 trades between 1955 and 1960, involving a total of 59 players, the vast majority of which went to the Bronx and contributed to the Yankees' dynastic ways. The Athletics were awful, never finishing above 500 during their entire tenure in Kansas City. Charlie Finley obtained a controlling interest in the club after Johnson's death in 1960 and put an end to the Yankees' pipeline situation. Attendance languished, the club continued to lose, and over the next several years, Finley threatened to move the club to Dallas, to Atlanta, to Louisville, and even to what was described as a, quote, cow pasture in rural Peculiar, Missouri. At the same time, however, the seeds were being sown down in the minors, and the fruit of the Kansas City Athletics farm system would eventually blossom in Oakland, where the franchise moved in 1968 and where they won three consecutive World Series in the early 1970s. The last Kansas City A to play in the majors was Reginald Martinez Reggie Jackson, who played in 35 games for Kansas City in 1967 and hit one home run for the club, the first of his 563 major league round trippers. He retired in 1987. KC was the first stop along the way to his journey to October immortality. And the Kansas City Athletics, Buster, are this week's forgotten franchise.
So in this age of analytics, I'm going to throw a thought at you about the Kansas City Athletics. I mean, forget the years when they were the Yankees farm system. From the time Charlie Finley owned them to the time that they moved on, I don't know if a franchise had like more impact per year. Like if you think about, you know, what Charlie Finley represented in baseball, you know, the changes he proposed, the colors, you know, fan experience and this incredible group of players they collected on those teams, you know, Catfish Hunter, Reggie Jackson, as you said, I don't know if a team had as much impact in such a short period of time as Charlie Finley's Kansas City Athletics.
I think you're right, Buster. I think that they punched very high above their weight is what we might say in a lot of ways. And here's another picture that you might have seen along the way. There are several of them, of these young Kansas City A's players in spring training. And, you know, you look at that now and you know that this is, again, these are the seeds of the dynasty that would follow in Oakland. And it's impossible to think about, because it never would have happened. But if that club would have remained in Kansas City, there would be no Royals expansion team that would come in a year after they departed. Three World Series in KC in the early 70s. Who knows? All of those great what ifs. But yeah, hugely influential.
All right, Todd, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, guys, here we go. So, gentlemen, this was the first costumed mascot in Major League history. Was it A, Mr. Met? B, Philadelphia Phil, C, Mr. Redlegs, or D, Mr. Oriole, the first costumed mascot in Major League history? Mr. Wow. Met, Philadelphia Phil, Mr. Redlegs, or Mr. Oriole?
Taylor, you're going to go with Mr. Oriole, aren't you?
No. I'm going to go with Mr. Met. And you had a smirk on your face, Buster. I feel like you know this one.
I would say this. My smirk is because if it's Mr. Oriole and you were to get that wrong, it would haunt you the rest of the year. I'm going to say Mr. Redleg.
Well, you're both wrong, but Taylor will be haunted the rest of the year because it is Mr. Oriole.
Oh, no.
In 1954, way back in years God. Before the Mets ever existed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's a shocking development here.
I'll put one on a tee for you, Taylor. He put one on a tee for your favorite franchise. What is up?
I overthought it. I thought there's no way that it could be the Oriole. And you're right.
And I'm sitting here. We're on a Zoom for those who are listening. And I am looking at Taylor and he is wearing an Orioles cap. And I'm reading this question out loud. And I'm saying to myself, like Buster said, I threw a fat fastball right up the middle and you mistimed it.
Yep. Just sat there and stared at it. Yep.
I think that bear is safe, Taylor.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. All right. Todd, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. First up, we have Hot Dave at Dave's Hot Takes. Hot Dave writes in, will any team trade for more value before the deadline than Ian Anderson, Inoa, and D'Arnaud returning from the IL for the Braves? How concerned should the Mets be?
I got to say, like, I, you know, Jeff, when we're talking about Steve Cohen and how he's not necessarily going to give up value for the team to upgrade, I would not be super confident from the Mets. Like, I agree, Dave, with that. Like, the Braves are going to be getting back some good players, and they're not that far behind. They've been, you know, generally speaking, it's been a disappointing year for them. They've had some injuries, but one good week, and all of a sudden it's going to feel differently. And I just having worked and lived in New York, if this Mets team doesn't make the playoffs after being in first place for a lot of the year, Taylor, I think the backlash would be huge.
Oh my gosh, yeah, especially all the win now talk that Steve Cohen came in with. I mean, it would be entertaining from our vantage point, at least. I don't know about for Mets and Mets fans. Let's go to Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets. Elizabeth writes in, do you think the fact that the Blue Jays' first home game in 2 years comes on a trade deadline day will prevent them from trading a key player off the roster? Imagine thinking you're finally going to play at home only to be told you've been traded.
Yeah, that would be difficult if you were a player in that situation. The guy I'm kind of watching is Marcus Semien, because I've heard from other teams, they think that Semien might go before the deadline. And then yesterday I was asking some folks about that, and they said that no, you know, Semien, George Springer become such important parts of leadership of that team that the front office doesn't necessarily want to break this up. But they have drifted back in the standings. I think you could actually probably argue it either way. We'll see what happens.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter and send in those questions after the trade deadline, and we'll be sure to answer them tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone.
That's it for today. One last thing, my thanks to Dave Schoenfield, Tim Kirchen for hosting the last couple days. And today, my thanks to Jeff, to Hembo, to Todd, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Remember, the podcast on Friday will come out after the trade deadline. We'll tape it within an hour after the trade deadline, so look for it then. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.